Welcome back. This is Psych to the Blind. Let's start off with this whole Benjamin Netanyahu, AI, is he dead, is he alive thing, or theory. I don't believe he's dead. It just doesn't make sense for him to be dead. We all know everything they do is controlled. Everything they do is managed. But the reason why they're releasing him as an AI character is to see who can readily identify the mistakes in the AI engine. So when he was at the coffee shop and he picked up the coffee, it had the ability to spill, yet it never spills. The cash register reads 2024. Even the pocket of the barista, the pocket in one shot is a different position, and in the other frame, it drops a little bit below on her chest. Then they tried to release it again, where the wedding ring appeared when he had his hand down by his side, and then when he touched the chair, or when the motion till he touched the chair, the ring disappeared, and then when they changed the angle, it reappeared again. Then when he stood between two flags talking about Jesus Christ couldn't win against evil or something about Genghis Khan, which is, you could just tell that was AI. They're just seeing if people are going to swallow the script. But if you look at his arm on the right side, the sleeve drops, just magically drops once he puts his hand on the side of the podium. The reason why they're doing this, because you know that eventually they're going to use AI either with the Antichrist. I said this before, my opinion, when they talk about the Antichrist or the beast is going to have a massive head wound and then he reappears all healed up, I think it's going to be AI. I think they already programmed people's mind with Donald Trump, these fake assassinations of him getting shot in the ear, and a lot of people believe it. So it's not far-fetched to believe that the beast or the Antichrist, whoever's going to get this massive head wound, is going to be magically healed, is because they're going to be using AI. And AI engines are going to be so good, you're not going to readily identify if it's real or fake. So the reason why they're releasing this Benjamin Netanyahu AI is just so people can clean up the mistakes for them. I don't know why they can't watch it 100 times over and be like, okay, We've narrowed all the mistakes down. Now let's release it. I don't know why they're not doing it. I don't know why they ain't snatching people off the street and coming in and say, hey, is this AI or not? It'd be a long process if you bringing in 10 to 15 people at a time and trying to see if they can find the mistakes in AI. Again, you're not bringing in conspiracy theorists because conspiracy theorists ain't going to do it. And you would waste time bringing in just normal people who just aren't in the know, because they're going to automatically say, yes, this is real. So they put it on X or Twitter and people rip it apart. They come back each time trying to figure out how to make the videos better, because eventually they're going to have an event where it's all going to be AI. I mean, they released CGI during 9/11. They used technology we didn't think they had. Or think they were ever going to use. We swallowed that two big planes went into these buildings and never crumbled, never cracked, but were engulfed in a building made of steel. There's no way in the world I can see why we swallowed it, because we never seen anything like it. Not even in movies. The CGI wasn't that good in movies at that time. So to see a plane engulf or be engulfed in a steel building built to withstand a 747 crashing into it, that's all programming. That's all technology we haven't seen. They've had this technology before, a long time ago, just like they've had or had thoughts of making AI long ago. That's why I said when they made the Running Man movie, the new one, it was the cover up for the first Running Man that was about AI. When Arnold Schwarzenegger's character is getting killed off and he comes down into this arena and Jesse the Body Ventura kills him, and then he kills the girl, and it's supposed to be real and everybody believes it. Everybody believes Ben Richards is dead, but it was all AI. He just called it something completely different. He called it like digital mapping, where he used a digital version of Arnold Schwarzenegger's character from the real fight scenes and then brought it over to a new fight scene with a new character. It ain't nothing but AI is what they were talking about. The whole Bakersphere massacre, it was AI. It was just telling you, we're going to change news stories based on AI. You won't know what's real or not. So that's what they're doing. Now, a brother asked, in the last, I think an episode before, he asked about what is, if the real biblical lands is in South Africa, then where is Shem's lot? Where is his allotment? And where is the portion that was given to him? And we can go to Jubilees 8, verse 21. And he knew that a blessed portion and a blessing had come to Shem and his sons unto the generations forever, the whole land of Eden and the whole land of the Red Sea. So if the whole land of Eden is in South Africa, you know this because they put it in plain sight. If you look up Kanaland, you would see they would use the Paleo-Hebrew character as the K or next to the K. If you look up the Garden Route District or the Garden Route Municipality, that's in the southern tip of South Africa. It was once called the Garden Municipality. Now it was called the Eden District. And it's not by mistake. De Verger, 1411 map. He has the concentric rings and four major rivers coming out of these concentric rings that are in South Africa, which are the four or five rivers mentioned in the book of Genesis that are connected to the Garden of Eden. So if Negroes in this country are direct descendants of Shem, that means that is our entire land forever. That is our portion. And the whole land of the East and India. So Indians are our Elamite brethren. So if you look at where Shem is literally across, like above and below the equator, just going across that belt into India and on the Red Sea and the mountains thereof and all the land of Bashan and all the land of Lebanon and the islands of Kaftur and all the mountains of Senir and Amna and the mountains of Ashishor in the north. That is North Africa. Ashishor, if you look up some of these old maps, Ashishor, or the Assyrian Empire, which was right close to the Syrian Empire, which was Aram, because Aram and Ashishor are brothers. They are direct descendants of Shem. They are Negro-like. If you use the Zondervan Bible description of who the Hamites were, who the Shemites were, it says the Hamites are Africans, like Libyans, Ethiopians. They're Africans, but Shem is the progenitor of the Negroes. So all the line of Shem, Eber, Peleg, Ashishor, Aram are Negroes. And they were in they were near the mountains of Ashishor. And the mountains of Ashishor, to me, are the Atlas Mountains or the mountains of Ararat. That's where the Ark rested. It did not rest in where you think, all up in the Caucasus Mountains. Because if you read scripture, it says the mountains of Ararat, which means there were plenty mountains that were at an extreme height around Ararat. Ararat just means large or big. But if you go to the Ararat where they said the ark rested, it's just one mountain. And if you read Jasher and Jubilees, it will tell you the direction in which when the ark rested and they came out of the ark, they went east. But if you use Mount Ararat in the Caucasus Mountains, there's no way in the world they went east, because they would have went right into Russia or right into the waters over there. They would have to go south, then east, in order to even be in that Saudi Arabian, Babylon, location. So that's why I believe that it was in the Atlas Mountains. Because when they went east, they go right across Elam, Ashishor, Babel, Shushan, and Medai. and I've seen plenty of maps of Meda'i, which is Media, Persia, and Central Africa. So it's like I said, it's right across that belt. It says, the mountains of Ashishur in the north and all the land of Elam, Ashishur, Elam, Elamites, Ashishur, and Babel, and Shishon, and Meda'i, and all the mountains of Ararat, and all the region beyond the sea, which is beyond the mountains of Ashishur, towards the north, a blessed and spacious land, and all that is in it, it is very good. Now, if we are, like I said, the descendants of Shem, that means Yasharel has to be in Africa. Jerusalem has to be in Africa. Because if Shem has been given the whole land of Eden, we are in that region. How can he say that we are a blessed, are we getting a blessed and spacious land just to be in that tiny little place no bigger than New Jersey? Doesn't make sense. It really don't. That's why I say the land is important. Yirmiyahu 3, verses 17 through 20. At that time, they shall call Yerushalayim the throne of Yahuwah. They're not calling America the throne of Yahuwah. Russia, the throne of Yahuwah. Tokyo, the throne of Yahuwah. Australia, the throne of Yahuwah. Iceland, the throne of Yahuwah. Alaska, the throne of Yahuwah. No, he's calling Yerushalayim the throne of Yahuwah. And all the nations shall be gathered unto it, to the name of Yahuwah, to Yerushalayim. Neither shall they walk anymore after the imagination of their evil heart. So whatever your mind goes, wherever your heart goes and thinking, oh, I can just do whatever I want. Okay. So you're trying to tell me you're going to stay behind? If the Most High says you're going to come to Yerushalayim and you're going to do my feast days, you're going to do my new moon Shabbats, you're going to tell me, you're going to say to him, no, you ain't going to do it? That what you're telling me? In your heart, you devised some counsel within yourselves that says, okay, I'm not going to go when they go. I'm going to stay right here and do the feast days and the new moons the way I want to do them in the hemisphere I want to do them in. He's saying people are across this nation are going to go somewhere. In those days, the house of Yehuda shall walk with the house of Yasharel, and they shall come together out of the land of the north to the land that I have given for inheritance unto your fathers. Since y'all love the northern hemisphere so much, stay here then. I don't know how anybody can disagree with me about this. If that's what you want to do, America is your homeland. The northern hemisphere is your homeland. Stay here. When everybody's getting gathered to go, just stay here. Unless you think that you're going to go to the promised land, you're going to go to Yerushalayim and say, no, I'm not going to do these seasons in the southern hemisphere. I'm going to stick to the northern hemisphere. If that makes sense to you, go ahead and do it. But I said, how shall I put you among the children and give you a pleasant land, a goodly heritage of the host of the nations? Let me read that again. But I said, how shall I put you among the children and give you a pleasant land, a goodly heritage of the host of nations? That means multiple nations are supposed to come unto this land. You think 10 people per nation is going to come to Yerushalayim? No. A host of people are going to come to Yerushalayim. It's going to be enough people. You're trying to tell me they're all going to go to Israel? You're going to tell me all these nations that right now two nations can't even fit in that land. You're going to tell me multiple nations, Yavon, Tubal, Meshech, Yafet, Magog, Gog. You're trying to tell me, I ain't even gotten to Esau. I ain't even got to Shem's. Ashishur, Aram, I didn't even got to those biblical nations. I'm talking about two nations right now can't even fit in that land. And you're going to try to tell me that's where the real land is. When the Father says, when Abba Yahuwah says, a land, a pleasant land, and a goodly heritage of the host of nations. There was more than one nation in this particular land. Was it not the Jebusites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Nephilim? It was a bunch of nations in this particular land that he's talking about. So it tells me that the land is large. that's able to fit more than one nation, even two, even three, even four. Not a nation that can barely fit two people in it. And I said, you shall call me my father and shall not turn away from me. Surely as a woman treacherously departs from her man, so have ye dealt treacherously with me, O house of Yasharel, says Yahuwah. Nothing is new under the sun. It is disobedience that people's biggest issue. And it's usually the issue with effort. Not that you can't do it, is that you won't do it. Zechariah 14:16-19. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the king, Yahuwah Sabaoth, and to keep the feast of Sukkot. Now, obviously, this is an end times revelation, an end times prophecy. So whoever's left out of these nations of Shem, Ham, Japheth, and their descendants, whoever's left, all the nations which came against Jerusalem in the last days. That's why he's gathering them up. Just like the days of old where Nimrod was gathering the nations up to go against the Most High Yahuwah. The Most High is allowing them to build again that tower to come against the land of Jerusalem. So it could be a sign and a symbol that he dwells in Jerusalem, that he dwells in the true biblical lands. Why do you think Russia, China, Gog and Magog are already positioned themselves in the, what they call the Kuh Belt, which is near the Niger River? Across Africa in the Kuh Belt is Israel, Russia, China, America. They're at the belt. They're at the door. The Most High is holding them. If you read the prophecies of Ezekiel, chapters 30 on into the end of Ezekiel, he talks about, I'm going to put hooks in their nose and turn them back around. After he has brought them down to his mountains, his land, he's going to embarrass them and send them back. This is a show or a sign of who he's always defended, who he's truly with, who he has truly have love for, who the apple of his eye is, who is part of his inheritance. And it shall be that whoso will not come up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem, mind you, he says, come up, up. Northern Africa is at a lower elevation than Southern Africa. Why would you, in a fake land, need to go up? When they tell me that Mount Zion is not actually a mountain, but a foothill, and it's but 3,000 feet. If you look at the elevation between Jerusalem, the fake Jerusalem, or fake Israel, if you look at the elevation of where that is, you don't have problems walking up there. I don't think you would classify it as walking up. But he says, and it shall be that whoso will not come up of all the families of the earth unto Jerusalem to worship the king, Yahuwah Sabaoth, even upon them shall be no rain. Going to cause a drought who choose not to come up and keep the feast of Sukkot. This is why I mentioned the last episode. That where do you think you're going to go once he gathers these nations? Where everybody gathering to? You trying to tell me at the time of gathering you're going to stay behind because you're so attached to the northern hemisphere, and you're trying to make 364 days work in a solar calendar? That you don't want to search out the land? You don't want to search your, at least your Ruach, seek after what the Most High Yahuwah has so much pride in? That's what you're telling me? You ain't even telling me this. You're telling yourself and you're telling Yahuwah with your actions. Like again, I'm going to clean this up. You're not going to be judged wrong or wicked or whatever if you don't follow the seasons of the land. I'm not saying you're going to be doomed. A sister asked about this on TikTok. She said, well, are we going to get punished if we don't do the seasons in the southern hemisphere? I'm like, I ain't the one that tell you this. I'm just telling you where it's been, where the Most High pushes me. That's what I'm telling you. I'm telling you where he is leading me. He is bringing me along. I can't see information that is new and makes sense and say, you know what? I'm going to turn myself away from this and just stay where I'm at. That I'm not going to elevate. Is that what you're telling yourself? I don't want to do this because it seems hard. I don't want to do this because I don't have time to figure it all out. I don't have time to go through the scriptures. No one said you got to do this by next week. This ain't like a test that I need these answers done within the next 4 or 5 hours type of thing. No, it's not a pop quiz. I didn't figure this out overnight. But you ask the Most High, Yahuwah, to lead you, strengthen you, take away the haughty mindedness that you have against seeking him wholeheartedly, that you should never be at rest. Truly, you should never be at rest in seeking the Father. You were not at rest when you were seeking wickedness. You were not at rest when you were seeking sinful behaviors. You did it to the utmost ability of your flesh. Did you not? Did we not all do that? Did any of us half-ass sinning? No, we did not. You don't half-ass cheating. You don't half-ass fornicating. You don't half-ass none of it. Ain't none of us took one shot and say, you know, we're just going to go on home. Not one man in here put his tip in and say, you know what? That's all I need for the night. When emotions are high, you drunk and all that, not one man say, you know what? I'm just going to put the tip in and I'm going to pack it on up and go home. Not none of you did this. When you women open your legs, had no drawers on and all that, you didn't be like, you know what? I just want to feel just a tiny bit of it and I'm going to go ahead and put my drawers back on, get up and take an Uber and go on home. Now, if it's whack, I know some of y'all did that, but it wasn't based on no righteousness. And you ain't fooling nobody. When we did sin, we did it to the best of our ability. So when it comes to seeking the Heavenly Father, we have a lot. We are expected to do a lot. We have a lot on our back. We don't, like I said before, we don't know what the bar is. We can only tell by the most perfect man that none of us will be that perfect. But he has told us what that bar is. He has told us by other men that came before him, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yasharel. And none of us are Levites, so we don't get the blessing of being taken up and being a part of that inheritance. And even the Levite priests were built different. Built different. They had to carry the priesthood. They had to be extremely pure and righteous to even the Most High to say, you know what, I'm gonna bring you up here like he did Eliyahu, Ezra, and Baruch. Don't number yourself, what he told Ezra, don't number yourself with the wicked. You have a treasure of works stored up that will not be shown unto you until the last times. But before I show you your works, come on up here with me. Not seeing death. None of us are going to get that honor. But damn, don't you feel like you should shoot for it? Who knows where you will end up if you overshoot heaven? Who knows? Even Yahushua said, if your righteousness doesn't exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees and scribes, you are not fit to enter the kingdom. Verse 18 of Zechariah 14. And if the family of Mizraim go not up, and come not, and have no rain, there should be the plague wherewith Yahuwah will smite the heathen that come not up to keep the feast of Sukkot. He's saying the inhabitants of Egypt, or he could say, and if the family of Mizraim, which means the Hamites, that means whoever's left in Africa, all the other nations are coming. Now, if those who are in the land, those who are of Hamitic bloodline don't come up, he's going to smite them where they can have no rain. With the plague, Yahuwah will smite the heathen that come not up to keep the feast of Sukkot. So if he called and said, after you have already done the Sukkot of the Northern Hemisphere, and he called you and said, hey, come down here to do this feast, what y'all going to say? I'm just reading the scriptures. I'm telling you what he's going to do or what he's already done. We just ain't living it yet. But I'm telling you what it's already promised was going to happen. You want to try to tell me after what he just said is going to eventually happen for those who are disobedient? You want to tell me, no, I'm good. It's too much for me to get up and go down to the Southern Hemisphere and redo Feast of Sukkot. This shall be the punishment of Mitzrayim and the punishment of all nations that come not up to keep the Feast of Sukkot. Now, he mentioned the Feast of Sukkot, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 4 verses. He mentions it 3 times out of 4. 3 times out of 4 to come keep this feast. That's how important this feast is in his biblical lands is to him. And y'all going to tell me, nah, I'm good. This is all the dress rehearsal for this. That's what I'm telling you. I'm telling you, I'm already there because I know eventually if I get to see his wonders and I'm saved for the evils that are come upon the in the end times and the end days, I'm going to be good if I am successful in these trials. I already know what's expected. If I don't make it, boom, he knows I was there in Ruach. He knows I was preparing to go there anyway. It's all about a willing heart, uncircumcising the foreskin of your heart, not to be stiff-necked, not to be haughty-minded, but to completely surrender to his will. It ain't my will. I'm just telling you what I found, but it's his will. Maybe his will for you is to not be in this land. Maybe his will for you is to just stay in the northern hemisphere. Maybe that's his will. I don't know. But we know what happens to disobedience, especially during the second Exodus. Go to Yasher 80, verses 36 to 39. And Elohim sent darkness upon Mizraim, that the whole land of Mizraim and Pathrock became dark for 3 days, so that a man could not see his hand when he lifted it to his mouth. At the time died many of the people of Yasharel who had rebelled against Yahuwah and who could not hearken to Moshe and Aaron and believe not in them that Elohim or Yahuwah had sent them. I am not Aaron. I am not Moshe. I am not on any level of a prophet or apostle. I am a soldier. A servant, a soldier. What I'm saying is, if Yahuwah told you, I want you to prepare for Sukkot or Pesach during a time that you don't think that it's the true season or where you think it's not the appointed time after you have already done it in March or April. What if he tells you, September, get ready? What are you going to say? I've already done it. Because, it ain't like he coming out of the clouds and going to tell you face to face, hey, you need to do it this month. You need to do it that month. And I'm not saying I'm completely right either, but I'm saying I got a good chance of being right. If he came down out of the clouds and told, he wouldn't even have to come out of the clouds and tell me anything. He could just already communicate with me the way I've known him to communicate with me, and I would rearrange my whole thing for him. But would you do the same is what I'm saying. If you're used to doing it one way and he comes down or he gets somebody to tell you, hey, I want you to start telling people to prepare during this month because this is the month I'm coming. This is when the exit is going to happen. What are y'all going to do? Be disobedient? And keep being disobedient? Because you know how serious the first Exodus was. It wasn't only the Egyptians that got caught lacking. It was Israelites who didn't believe, who assumed, who followed off after their own heart. If you don't hearken to the truth, or at least try to find and seek the truth, I don't know how you're going to prepare your souls for what's going to come. Because you could be preparing for Pesach on March and April, where it could be something dreadful happen, where you think that we're leaving out on a specific date or a specific time. And then when everybody's getting ready to pack up and leave during the real biblical appointed time, which is in the Southern Hemisphere, you'd be surprised too. This is almost like what? The virgins and their lamps? Would that be similar to that? Assuming and thinking like, oh, this is the time we need to go, and then find out, oops, I don't have enough oil because why? I'm in the Northern Hemisphere. And my seasons are based on the Northern Hemisphere. And then the Most High shows you that it's always been about his land, about his seasons and his time. That, oh, we're leaving later than what you thought. And you ain't got no more oil. Then you got to go back to the store. And then you come to the door and you find out you get shut out of the door. Now, mind you, I don't think it's that drastic. But then again, I'm just telling you what how the harshness of Yahuwah could be. Like it says the righteous are scarcely saved. So those who don't obey the gospel, what do you think is going to happen to them? Like I said, you seek it on your own. I'm just trying to tell you, none of us have a clear understanding of what judgment the Most High is going to use with us. We don't know. We can assume that as soon as we woke up, we're good, we're taken care of. We still don't know. We don't know that bar that Most High is going to judge us through. He's going to slide us under during underneath judgment, even when we make a lot of mistakes, or the mistakes are going to be have to be so small enough for us to go under this bar of judgment. We don't know. So I'm telling you, to seek as much as you can while you can. It's going to come a time you're not going to be able to seek nothing. That you may even, in fact, get in trouble for seeking or mentioning or searching, or you won't have access to resources or materials. You see the changing scriptures, you see them changing the names as we speak, and that's not just with the Sefer that I've noticed this, it's with other scriptures or what other translations. They keep coming out with a translation, trying to change meanings and names of nations and words. So who's to say what the truth is going to be when it comes to the Bible 5 or 6 years from now? They're already trying to get you to believe that AI can decipher the entire Bible where you don't need to read the Bible, you just listen to AI. And it says, and who had said, we will not go forth from Mitzrayim, lest we perish with hunger in a desolate wilderness, who would not hearken to the voice of Moshe. And Yahuwah plagued them in the 3 days of darkness. And Yahshua buried them in those days without the Mitzrayim knowing of them or rejoicing over them. So it's just probably a bittersweet moment that those who didn't know it was time to leave chose not to leave or chose not to obey Moshe or Aaron, that they died only knowing slavery. Though 430 years, but 200 and some years being the hardest affliction they have ever had to endure, that they don't even get to see the promised land. They don't get to see the promises, the miracles, and the wonders because they just didn't want to listen to Moshe and Aaron. That they were so afraid of going into the wilderness that they thought that they were going to perish from hunger if they followed somebody that obviously the Most High has risen up. Sadly, outside of the calendar, outside of the real biblical lands, that's exactly what's going to happen to a lot of Negroes in this country. Even those who say they are awakened or are following the truth, even they are going to be tested. Like I said, there's going to be a war between the have and the have-nots. It says, those who endure to the end shall be saved. So maybe it would take you to lose everything, rock bottom, barely holding on to the thread, on your last meal, your last dollar, till the Most High comes in and dumps all these blessings in your lap because you were faithful. Some people will need to be proven this way. I just hope it won't be a lot of you. But that's why I said when the Most High comes to of judgment, especially with Yasharel, he don't embarrass you out in front of your enemies. Unless you were just blatantly disrespectful or disobedient, the Most High does everything in-house. Passionate and merciful enough to not even let the Egyptians gloat or boast that, look, ha ha ha, the same curses and plagues are happening to them too, so their God don't like them either. The reason why the Most High chose judgment in the darkness over Yasharel, just so the enemies wouldn't gloat over us. Now, I was talking about fornication is with like the top wickedness or the top iniquity that the Most High couldn't stand. And this didn't come from this just the Most High. It also came from Abraham when he was talking to Isaac and passed down that fornication is the work of uncleanness in the nation of Yasharel, that we should not be like the other nations in regards of our flesh and our body. And this came up, like I said before, when I do these episodes, the Most High does not allow me to have a haughty mind or a high mind and thinking that this information just comes from me. He usually just brings in a confirmation from another source that says, "Ha, you, what you said is found in scripture." So when I talked about the episode, in the last episode about fornication, my cousin, the next day, my cousin, I rarely ever talk to him. He texted me that he was having a debate about, there's a part in Numbers that talks about whether the Most High instituted or validated abortion. I said, that don't even make sense. It don't even sound like the Most High. He said, yeah, but it's found in Numbers. So I know this is the Ruach of wisdom, or Yahuwah saying, hey, nah, look at these verses. It will pair nicely with what you're talking about with fornication. In the book of Numbers, chapter 5, verses 11 through 31, this is long. It says, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, saying, speak unto the children of Yasharel, and say unto them, if any man's woman go aside and commit a trespass against him, and a man lie with her carnally, and it be hid from the eyes of her man, and be kept close, she be defiled, and there be no witness against her, neither she be taken with the manner, and the ruach of jealousy come upon him, and he be jealous of his woman, and she be defiled, or if the ruach of jealousy come upon him, and he be jealous of his woman, and she not be defiled, then shall the man bring his woman unto the priest, and he shall bring her offering for her, the tenth part of an ephah of barley meal. He shall pour no oil upon it, nor put frankincense thereon, for it is an offering of jealousy and an offering of memorial, bringing iniquity to remembrance. I mean, these are some strict ordinances. And the priest shall bring her near and set her before Yahuwah. And the priest shall take holy water in an earthen vessel and of the dust that is in the floor of the tabernacle, and the priest shall take and put it into the water. And the priest shall set the woman before Yahuwah and uncover the woman's head, and put the offering of memorial in her hands, which is the jealousy offering. And the priest shall have in his hand the bitter water that causes the curse. And the priest shall charge her by seven oaths and say unto the woman, if no man has lain with you, and if you have not gone aside to uncleanness with another instead of your man, be free from this bitter water that causes the curse. But if you have gone aside to another instead of your man, and if you be defiled, and some man have lain with you beside your man, then the priest shall charge the woman with an oath of cursing. And the priest shall say unto the woman, Yahuwah make you a curse and an oath among your people, when Yahuwah makes your thigh to rot and your belly to swell. Mind you, this sounds like the abortion before the abortion. And I shouldn't even put it that way. It's almost like the morning after pill. That's what this sounds like. It sounds like the curse is to make her thigh rot. Now, we know when it comes to STDs, the women feel it in their lymph nodes, and the lymph nodes are connected to the upper groin area or the upper thigh, if I'm not mistaken. And of course, the belly to rot. So basically killing any chance of her having a seed, any chance of her passing down this curse unto a bloodline. Now, mind you, imagine the nation of Yasharel today, the Negro in America today. We could benefit from these ordinances and these statutes. This is why they forced hypersexuality on us. This is why they forced these images that you see in media over top of us. This is why they put the woman in over top of the household, because when the woman go out and do whatever she want, it invites curse. I think it was in Sirach, it says, the woman became the beginning of sin, and through her we all die. So the Most High knows coming out of that womb is going to create monsters. It's going to create curses through disobedience and through waywardness. This is why they say fornication amongst the children of Yashareel is an unclean act. The Most High is strict. When he talks about cleanliness and holiness, he is strict. The program is strict. So imagine your woman cheating on you, and you caught her, and you were, obviously all men are jealous over their woman. You got to bring her to the priest. Then if you get caught and you know you laying with another man carnally, you got to drink bitter water. Or whatever they put in that water, you got to drink it to clean your entire system out. So you can walk around as a curse and people know you cursed. No one's going to lay with you after that because they know you cursed. No one's going to go into your vagina because they know it's cursed. There wouldn't be so many single mothers today, and there wouldn't be so many people bragging online that they love to cheat. There is a whole community of people on TikTok dedicating their lives to being cheaters and be proud of it. I'm not talking about just Negroes. I'm talking about all races. Proud that they're cheating. And they get upset that they couldn't cheat more before they got rid of the dude. These women wouldn't be able to have any children. Their bloodlines would be cut off if we had these ordinances intact. Then the priest shall charge the woman with an oath of cursing, and the priest shall say unto the woman, Yahuwah make you a curse and an oath among your people when Yahuwah makes your thigh to rot and your belly to swell. And this water that causes the curse shall go into your bowels to make your belly to swell and your thigh to rot. And the woman shall say, Amen, amen. And the priest shall write these curses in a sefer, and he shall blot them out with the bitter water. He shall cause the woman to drink the bitter water that causes the curse, and the water that causes the curse shall enter into her and become bitter. Then the priest shall take the jealousy offering out of the woman's hand and shall wave the offering before Yahuwah and offer it upon the altar. And the priest shall take a handful of the offering, even the memorial thereof, and burn it upon the altar, and afterward shall cause the woman to drink the water. Now, it's an ordinance, but it seems like it's more than an ordinance, that it's like a spiritual thing that the Most High only sees beyond the veil. We don't see with these ascending smoke offerings, drink offerings, and oblations that we do to the Most High beyond the veil that we have before our eyes. We don't get to see that. But you see how smoke and fire rises up. Who's to say that it's not used as a signal beyond the veil that a house needs to be protected? Especially when not a lot of people are doing ascending smoke offerings or drink offerings to Yahuwah. Like I said, we don't get to see. What if that's like our dome, our iron dome? What if that's what it really is? That each time we offer to the Most High, it causes a force field around us, a hedge grows around us. It becomes a signal to unclean rocks and also the angels to defend this home. How do you not know that that's not what happens when we offer to the Most High Yahuwah? So obviously, when it comes to these type of offerings, like the jealousy offering and waving it and all that, who's to say beyond the veil, when there's unclean rocks outside, demons walking about from the Nephilim and the Rephaim, and devils and Satans and stuff, pay attention to see if they can destroy the children of Yashareel or not. Who's to say beyond the veil that once these ordinances happen, they got to back off? Do we ever look at it like that? Or do we look at it as, oh, I got to go to the grocery store and I got to buy this. I got to get the wine. I don't do it right. I got to do the feast days and I got to burn it. Like, y'all look at it like that. But why don't we look at it as, okay, I'm enhancing my protection. I'm fortifying my hedge. Because obviously the Most High can see something that we don't see. The angels know something that we don't know. The faith is, if I'm doing this, I know that I'm doing it for a purpose. And that purpose may be beyond my understanding, but I'm doing it because I'm blessed doing it. I'm protected when I do it. So it makes sense to me that maybe there's something beyond the veil that I don't know, but I am encouraging it based on my obedience and my faith to it. And when he has made her to drink the water, then it shall come to pass that if she be defiled and have done trespass against her man, that the water that causes the curse shall enter into her and become bitter, and her belly shall swell, and her thigh shall rot, and the woman shall be a curse among her people. And if the woman be not defiled, but be clean, then she shall be free, and shall conceive seed. And if the woman be not defiled, but be clean, then shall she be free, and shall conceive seed. So it seems the curse is cutting off the woman's ability to give birth. Now, mind you, I don't know where it goes when it comes to David, because obviously David and Bathsheba committed adultery, and you see what happened to the first child. The first child died, but he was able, through the forgiveness of Yahuwah, which Yahuwah chose him above all people at that time, the man after his own heart. So Yah has a soft spot for David. So he didn't completely cut off the descendants out of Bathsheba. So, of course, we get Solomon. But the Most High was still showing judgment that he didn't allow that first seed to come into this world from adultery. And he didn't have to go through that ordinance of being cleanness or jealous. Obviously, the man couldn't be jealous because he was dead. So probably that cut off that ordinance of offering the jealousy offering, you know, coming to the priest and all that and catching her in the manner of the act and all that. That was done away with because obviously the man couldn't do anything because he was dead. This is the Torah of jealousies when a woman goes aside to another instead of her man and is defiled. Or when the ruach of jealousy comes upon him and he be jealous over his woman, and shall set the woman before Yahuwah, and the priest shall execute upon her all this Torah. Then shall the man be guiltless from iniquity, and this woman shall bear her iniquity. This generation is way too proud to bear their iniquity without shame, without remorse, and without repentance. But I'm just saying, back then it was strict. It's still strict somewhat, but back then they were really strict. So again, who's to say what the bar really is? Are we going to be judged harshly like the Israelites were judged harshly? Because it's going to come a time that we're going to see the same wonders, miracles that the Israelites saw in the first Exodus. So we won't really have an excuse to backslide. Just like he didn't give them no leeway to backslide because they came from a time or a generation where they saw a lot of the Most High's miracles. They even got to talk to the prophets. The Levites were among them. We don't have any Levites among us. There are no apostles among us or prophets among us or even angels coming down to save us or talk to us or keep us out of things. We don't get any of that right now, not as a community or as a group because we're so spread out. So who's to say that once all these miracles and these wonders are shown to us, that he's going to be so lenient with us as he did when we woke up? Who's to say he will or won't? We don't know that. I'm only telling you to prepare for what happened during the first Exodus, how disobedience led them to be buried in the land they weren't even from. Do you really want to stay here? Is that what you say? You love it here? You want to stay here? Because this place is getting ate up. Eventually, it's going to get ate up. I don't know how any of you who claim more of this Native American heritage and trying to mingle it with Israelite heritage, I don't know how, like, what land you going to stay in then? Because I see some of you with feathers and all this other nonsense on your head or in your bios or next to your name, and you're so proud to be Native American because your grandmother was Native American somehow, and we all know how she got to be involved with Native American nations, especially some of you Negroes from the South. The five civilized tribes from the South became civilized tribes when they adopted the Eurocentric or the Euro-American way of life with slavery. They kept you in chattel slavery. They helped the white man hunt you down and keep you in perpetual slavery and bondage. You thought they were there to help you out. They were not. They kept you in bondage. And the Indian men went in unto your Negro great-great-great-great-grandmother. That's how you have any nation of Indian blood in you, either be Chickasaw, Choctaw, Seminole, or Creek. I know I'm missing one tribe. That's the only reason why you have that bloodline. The same way some of us have Irish and Scottish in our bloodline is because our ancestors were raped on those boats coming here or raped here. But I ain't going around wearing a kilt and being proud of being Scottish or Irish. So what are you going to do? You going to stay here? You going to do your Pesach whenever you feel like you want to do your Pesach? You going to do your feast days whenever you feel like you're going to do your feast days? So you preparing to stay here? Then you're going to be like those Israelites. You must be preparing to die here. I, for one, ain't preparing to stay here. I'm riding this wave out until I know it's time to actually leave. And when you don't even have to nudge me a couple of times to get me to leave. I'll be ready. I'm already got my bags packed. Mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, my bags are packed, ready to go. I'm just waiting for when all this comes by. It's like my Ruach is already at the docks. However we're going to get to the second Exodus, that's where my bags are. I'm doing these feast days as if I'm already in the biblical lands. I'm already there. But like I said, it's based on your seeking, based on what you want to know, and based on how hard you want to follow and know the Most High. And maybe it won't even be that you do the Southern Hemisphere feast days. Like, it may not be that, but it may be something else that you find out through whatever gift that the Most High has given you. Maybe you find out something that I have never talked about on this show. That's the beauty of it. Maybe you'll learn something that I haven't even learned yet. That's what I would want for you. To find out something that I don't know, so then you start the teaching, and you start the telling, and you start the posting, and then it all come full circle. And then somehow we meet in the middle, or if we don't meet at all, that you've created another community of people seeking after Yah, seeking after truth because of the stuff that you have been exposed to. That's the beauty of the Ruach HaKodesh. That's the beauty of Paul saying that we are all members of the body of Yahusha. Some will be the arm, some will be the leg, some will be the head, some will be the nose, some will be the mouth, some will be the teeth. Everybody has a part in the body of Yahusha. Regardless, I want everybody to find what part they are going to be in and walk in that part. Be that part. Because being that part, to the best of your ability, is going to save you from a lot of worrying about what's going to happen to this country, what's going to happen to this economy, and what's going to happen to your household. It will save you a lot. This is why the Most High says that we should not have the spirit or the ruach of fear. Because if you rely only on the fear of Yahuwah, He's going to make sure you're never going to be embarrassed by your enemies. So your enemies will never gloat over you. And like I said, beyond the veil, we don't see. We don't see what happens beyond the veil. If the Most High wants to shame some unclean ruachs or shame the Nephilim or shame Satan or shame these devils and demons, He's going to do it using you. But you won't know if the demons around you are going to be shamed because we don't see beyond this veil. So showing that we have no fear and we don't mess up His plans for us by being afraid, man, it's only one path to being exalted, which is up. Saving us from what would happen to everybody else who chose not to follow the gospel. That's the difference. That's why there is a separation of wheat and tare. Those who know and walk in it, and those who don't know and are afraid of every little thing that happens on their timeline. I mean, people are already saying this is World War III, and yet have not figured out that it's a proxy war. It's a war to destroy the petrodollar. They're not even showing you real bloodshed. For people who have all control of the media, they can frame stories, whatever they want to frame them as, you don't see bloodshed that they could use to sway your emotions. They keep showing you a little tiny battle in the middle of the sea or the ocean between a strait. That's all they're showing you. They're showing you a little battle of among ships. And they're showing you controlled demolitions of buildings. They're telling you all these missiles are falling out of the sky from Iran into Israel. You don't see mass devastation. If Israel was so hard set on making us hate Iranians or hate Muslims, they would show us the complete carnage of Israel when those bombs drop. To me, I think most of that is drones that you see. I mean, they pretty much shown you in that one Spider-Man movie. Was it Spider-Man Back Home or something like that, where he goes over to London and he meets Mysterio. And Mysterio, his whole thing was fooling people through drones. Y'all saw that little comet whizzing by, and everybody, oh, we saw these comets across the land, and within the couple of days of each other, oh, they're doing this, they're changing direction. And y'all don't think that's drones? It can't be no meteor, because we're in a closed system. Nothing has come in from this firmament unless the Most High has thrown rocks, as he did in the days of Gibeon. But there's no meteor coming out of the sky past that firmament. And it's definitely not making 90 degree G turns left and right to be even called a comet or a meteor. It's nothing but drones. It's a light show. They've been showing light shows for like the past 10 to 15 years to make you believe that something is out there. But people swallow this up, are in fear of what they don't know, because they rest everything they do know on the system that they're in. But people have so much distrust in government and distrust in politicians, yet don't have distrust in all of what they've been told. It shouldn't take that much. Once you know there's one Freemason in the White House, you know then that every facet of life in this country is controlled and managed somewhat by a Freemason. Your public school education system was created by a Freemason. That's easily looked up. That's why they give you art, science, math. They give you their arithmetic. They give you their mystery school religion. They give you watered-down versions of it. So when you start learning their real history, you're confused for some reason. That's why I don't understand how people are this oblivious to gematria and how they use it. It ain't nothing but low-key fourth grade, fifth grade algebra. Do you not do math problems where they made you find the solution of X when they give you the value of X? So if it was like 5 plus X and they told you beforehand that X equals 3, then you know without seeing the number 3 with 5 plus 3, you would see 5 plus X, you would know that the answer was 8. That's nothing but gematria, really, if you really want to get down to it. So I can make the letter of the alphabet any numeric value I want based on a particular cipher, and then I could lace it with all type of events or narratives that I want to lace it with, and then you would be fooled, and you will follow this narrative subconsciously into thinking you're following the truth, but you're following a lie. It should be easily identifiable by now, because now they're running their mouth about it. They're talking about codes. They're talking about astrology. They're talking about numerology and way to basketball players communicate with that basketball player. Or now they put it in your face where they brag that, oh, Luka, the kid from the Lakers, he shot a free throw, or he made 60 points as a Laker. And the last person to do this was Kobe Bryant. And they both did it at the same exact time, years apart. They're already bragging about they use numerology against you. Just like at the same time, LeBron James passed Robert Parrish, who he tied him at 1611. And if you look up when the 1611 King James Bible comes out, it's almost the same timeline and narrative. So it tells you that sports, everything they do for the people they control, is all managed. Whether it be for bloodshed or for sport, it's managed. Seeking Yahuwah, why he can be sought, is really, truly, should be our only thing that we have attached ourselves to know what's real and what real love is, what real knowledge is, what real understanding is. That's what I would want for you. And that's the only way you're going to get it is through seeking and through obeying, period. He calls for obedience. That's what it is, obedience. Regardless of how you feel about the ordinance, or it's too many laws, I don't get this statue, I'm not understanding it, I don't want to spend money on this, I don't have the time to do this, I don't want to build this. All of that counts against you. How can you be a willing vessel with so much doubt and fear into doing something so small that really doesn't cause you to pick up a sword, pick up a gun, pick up an axe, and go after your enemies? He's not calling us to do that. He didn't say tomorrow, leap this building in order for you to be saved. All he's saying is my laws, my statutes, my commandments are not grievous. All I'm asking you is a heart to do it. That's it.
So there was this group of women doing a study of the book of Malachi in the Old Testament. And they came upon the third verse in chapter 3, and it puzzled them. It said, he will sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. And they wondered what this statement meant about the character and nature of God. So one of the women offered to investigate the process of refining silver and then get back to them at their next Bible study. So that week, the woman called up a silversmith and was like, hey, can I come watch you while you work? And she didn't mention anything about why she wanted to do this other than her curiosity about the process of refining silver. So he agreed, and she went. And as she watched him, he held a piece of silver over the fire and let it heat up. He explained that in refining silver, one needed to hold the piece in the middle of the fire where the flames were the hottest, as to burn all the impurities away. The woman thought about God holding us in such a hot spot. Then she thought again about the verse. He sits as a refiner and purifier of silver. So she asked the silversmith if it was true, if he had to sit there in front of the fire the entire time that the silver was being refined. He said yes, and he went on to explain that not only did he have to sit there, but he had to keep a very close eye on it, because if it was left a moment too long, then it would be damaged. The woman was silent for a moment, and then she asked, how do you know when the silver is fully refined? And he smiled and said, that's easy. When I see my image in it.